You're listening to the Clutter Fairy Weekly, a weekly webcast and podcast brought to you by the Clutter Fairy in Houston, Texas. If you'd like to participate in one of our live webcasts, please visit cfhou.com/weekly. You'll find a calendar of upcoming webcasts, as well as instructions for joining the Zoom meeting via the app or by phone. We'd love to see you. That URL again is cfhou.com/weekly. Now here's the weekly episode. Enjoy.
Hi, Clutter Fairy fans. This is the Clutter Fairy Weekly for May 10th, 2022. I'm your co-host, Ed Gumnick, and I'm speaking with Gail Goddard, certified professional organizer and owner of the Clutter Fairy in Houston, Texas.
Hi, everybody. The Clutter Fairy Weekly is the webcast and podcast that digs deep into the clutter that piles up between you and the life you want to be living. We explore the habits and behaviors that lead to clutter, and we suggest strategies to slow the accumulation, reduce the collection, and comfortably manage the stuff we decide to keep.
If you're new to Zoom, we want to let you know that you can share your comments and questions via the chat, and I'll try to make sure Gail addresses them before we move on to another topic. You can also use the raise hand feature to let us know that you'd like to ask a question or make a comment yourself via audio or video. We're also streaming the webcast live on Facebook, so you can share your questions and comments there, and I'll share them with Gail. We're going to start, as we usually do, by recapping last week's tittle,
which was called
Good Things in Small Packages. The assignment was to address a small space organizing problem in your home or life. We want to hear from our participants in Zoom and on Facebook who has a tittle report to share this week. Please let us know in the comments. We had a couple of comments this week about dorm rooms, which were one of the topics we discussed last week.
Sort of a perfect small space, right? Everybody has some experience of trying to be crowbarred into a dorm room.
Yeah. And we had a couple of comments that added to or amplified some of our messages from last week. So I wanted to share those. One of them was pointing out that you're going to be, you know, in most cases in a dorm, at least starting out, you're going to be sharing a room with a stranger. And so that's a good reason to take as little as you can manage with. And you also, dorms tend to be places that are a little chaotic. A lot of people coming and going and doors left open and lots of foot traffic.
People and walking in and out all the time.
Someone suggested bring along a trunk that can double as seating or serve another function and can also be locked so that you have a place to lock up your more valuable possessions because you can't be there all the time watching them.
Right.
You're supposed to go to class at some point.
Right. Yeah. It's not just about staying in that dorm room, right?
Yeah. I don't think anyone has commented on a small space organizing. Did anybody work on this? Did you work on any projects in this category this week, Gail?
That's a good question. I'm trying to think if what anything I worked on qualified as a small space. No, I don't think so. Samudra has her hand up, though.
Talk to us, Samudra.
Did you not mean to? She's looking shocked now.
There. I cleaned my bathroom. That's a small space.
Yay! How did it go?
It was the same as usual.
Throwing stuff out like mad, right?
No. There's almost nothing in it. It's a joke. It's a very small bathroom. There's no room to keep anything.
Oh, I see what you're saying. Okay. Well,
there's like three things under the sink, you know?
Right. And which makes it a small space to manage. That's excellent. That's helpful.
I just don't have a lot.
Well, good. Then you are the poster child for what we're trying to do here. Thank you.
Exactly.
So I cleaned it.
And that's Yay. What
we're supposed to do. So yes, I did deal with a small space.
Penny has her hand up.
I did a very small space this week. I had, you know, I haven't been in this place but a couple of months, and I had cookbooks. I only have about this many cookbooks on the kitchen counter because that's where they went. Well, I started looking at the cabinets where the dishes are stored, and I moved them to a higher cabin, a higher shelf. I moved some glasses and things down, kind of combined those, moved the cookbooks onto the shelf in the cupboard so I don't have to look at them because I really don't use them often, but I'm not ready to get rid of them. So, and it's a limited amount of space, which is what I've always done with, well, I most always have done with cookbooks, except when I was living on Bankside Drive, and then I had.
but I do know that you cook, you have go-to recipes that you go get out every once in a while, and you're going to make this thing, and you go pull it down to see your mother's recipe for whatever, or your favorite, cornbread recipe or whatever, you go and retrieve them. And so having them in the kitchen makes sense.
But I
and
did
putting them up.
I got rid of a bunch when I moved. The ones that I didn't, you know, they were sort of luxury. I didn't really use them, but I liked them. So yeah. I got rid of those. And now they all fit on one shelf. And that's the limit. There's not going to be any more. If they don't fit on that shelf, I have to get rid of something.
There you go.
And I've done that before in places I lived. And it works really well for me, especially with something like cookbooks, because, you know, after a while, you don't really want that one anymore. You don't really use it. It's cool, but so.
You tried it. You didn't like all the recipes. Off it goes, right? Well, and, you know, it's good that you set the container limit, right? Like, what, this is the shelf and it fits and that's as much as you're going to.
Yeah.
As much as you're going to take. That's excellent. That's good parameters. Yay. Good job. Thank you for sharing.
Thanks.
Emily Sue said, I've made a decision that as cost efficient as it is, I can't buy products in bulk. There's just no storage room. So that is kind of in the spirit of the tittle, acknowledging that your space is limited, that, and in this particular case, your pantry space or your food storage space.
Yeah, it doesn't make any sense to go to Costco to buy stuff if you live in a dorm or you live in a 400 square foot, 600 square foot efficiency apartment like that. You don't have storage space for, a big Costco size monster bin of toilet paper. You really have to buy much closer to your use volume instead of buying huge quantities to stash.
Yeah.
Because otherwise you're absolutely immediately filling things up with filling your living space up with storage in a small room. There's no excess square footage to be your storage room or your junk room, right? So your junk room becomes the one room you've got, and you don't have any room for anything. So that's a good one. Good job. Good acknowledgement of what's in the way.
Leslie, who's with us on Facebook, said, I'm decluttering in preparation to move from a 3-2-2 house to a 200 square foot bedroom.
Wow.
I'm not organizing it yet, but the struggle is real.
You're talking about that's like 95%. You're getting rid of 95% of your belongings to do that level of change from what probably is a 2000 square feet or something along in that vicinity to 200 square feet. That's a huge adjustment. Wow. That must be a big, big project. I hope that you're getting help along the way. I hope you don't have too much of a time crunch, and go, sister, go. If you've saved all your decluttering till now, you're going to have, you'll be shedding a lot. And when you get to the other end, you're just going to be like, wow, I feel so much lighter. Good luck. Keep coming back. And please post your struggles so that we can help you when you get stuck or something gets in the way. We would love to support you in this effort. So I'm sure this is going to feel overwhelming more than once while you're working on it. So let us know.
M said, I had already done my house as a small space, have lived in small spaces all my adult life, but I clean my handbag. That's a small space.
It is a small space, which makes it a shorter project usually, because you can only put so much in a purse. Although, you know, women have been expert for centuries in stuffing bags with one more thing. So it may be a little bit of work to clean it out, but it is at least a finite small container. Whatever is in the vein, like, that's totally awesome. Good job. It was a good small space. We didn't talk about it directly, but it totally qualifies as a small space. Y'all are awesome.
Connie reported, all week I've had to deal with small critters, ants,
Ooh.
Cleaning all the spaces they were calling into and out of. Ooh, that's no fun.
No, it is not fun. And they, you know, they leave those little chemical trails and you can't just kill the ants. You got to go back and disrupt the chemical trail, which is why the cleaning is required. So ick and sorry. It must be spring. The ants are moving in.
Gotcha. And Constance reported, I cleaned out the fridge and then promptly filled it up again. Which is okay, because
at least it's fresh food, right?
What your fridge is for. And it's definitely better to clean it first before filling it up again, instead of coming home from the grocery store and trying to figure out how to cram it all in there with the stuff that's gone bad already.
Yeah, exactly. That's exactly right. And thank goodness that you did it, because you will just be a happier camper that it won't, there isn't something in there dying and growing in becoming a science experiment if you've cleaned it out first. So good on you. I know that's a big project.
On the subject of cookbooks, Naomi said, I finally got rid of several cookbooks by just taking a picture of the one recipe I used in that book and letting the remaining hundreds of recipes that I never tried move along.
Hey, see, that's a good idea. And there's so much that you can contain now. I mean, there's so many ways for you to digitally keep up with those recipes, even if it's just the photograph in your phone, on your iPad or whatever, that it's very easy now to capture it and save it so it doesn't have to be in the book, which is great.
Leslie reported she started decluttering 9 months ago. She's the one moving to a 200 square foot bedroom.
Oh, yeah.
She started decluttering 9 months ago when she joined a group from church and found our YouTube.
Oh, yay. Thank goodness. Well, I'm glad we've been helping you along the way. And please, I'm sure other people would love to hear about your experiences. So anytime you want to chime in, tell us stories, talk about it in chat, I'm sure everybody would appreciate it.
And Janet on Facebook reports, now my car trunk has 6 large bags of clothes from my closet. Yay. Took 4 other bags last week. Love your tips.
Yay. Good job.
She also said, hi, Ed. I'm in Silver Spring, Maryland. Another Marylander. We have a good Maryland crowd today.
Right?
My ancestral homeland.
I was just there. The NAPO conference was in Baltimore. I got a little moment of light spring weather before I came home to the inferno that is Houston right now. Loved it. We were in the Inner Harbor. I got to look at the pretty harbor from the hotel, all the ships in the water. It was lovely. I miss it already because we're roasting down here.
Okay, we better get to our main topic.
Yes.
Whether you're managing a long-term clutter issue or starting fresh in a new space, a critical part of designing your organized life is maintenance. Well-designed habits can stop a tough situation from getting much worse or keep an organized space in tip-top shape. Today, we're going to explore the hows and whys of powerful maintenance habits to stem clutter before it starts.
We'll be right back.
Hey there, I'm Dave.
And I'm Greg, and we host the Unconventional Therapist Guide to Nothing,
a podcast all about mental health.
Well, Dave, I'd say it's more about psychology.
Yeah, but it's also true crime.
It's kind of about societal phenomenon and odd historical figures.
And cults.
Sometimes it's spooky, though.
How about this? This is the Unconventional Therapist Guide to Nothing.
So whether you're looking to work on your mental health, learn about history and society, or just have a few laughs, check us out. We're two licensed therapists trying to understand the world's anomalies.
Join us as we discuss the most interesting topics in a way that helps you better understand yourself, the world, and the people around you.
Frankly, I think all but a very few of us actually enjoy cleaning up. I myself like organizing, but I find the cleaning part, scrubbing the toilet, dusting, sweeping, all kinds of annoying. Don't even get me started about the vacuuming. I hate my vacuum cleaner with a white hot rage. It's something to do with pushing it around and the cord always being in the wrong place. It makes me insane. And it is the one time when I actually get super mad and yell at it, curse, like The process of vacuuming just turns me into a raging, insane person. And I don't even know why it makes me go off the edge, but it just does. We do these things because it's part of keeping a livable space. If we don't want to drown in dirt and pet hair and bacteria, we have to occasionally clean up our spaces. Maintenance is the stuff that you do in between the major cleanups. For instance, you brush your teeth twice a day, and every 6 months or so, you have to go to the dentist for a major cleaning again. This is a perfect analogy for clutter wrangling. You have to maintain it every day, and then every so often, you have to do a big overhaul. Another benefit of maintenance work, the better you are with maintenance, the easier the inevitable overhaul will be. If you're at the place where a major overhaul of your stuff is way past due, you might think that maintenance is the last thing on your mind. But truthfully, there are two things going on with your stuff in that moment. First, you have the stuff that's filling the house right now. That's the major overhaul project that's waiting for your attention. Second, there is anything new that's coming in, be it mail or groceries or clothes or household goods. That's the maintenance part of the house, managing the new items coming in so that the cleanup project doesn't keep going. And also managing putting away the things that are already there and you've taken out to use, and then resetting the house from you actively using things. That's the maintenance part of the house. If your house is already drowning, then I can guess that one of the things you regularly drop the ball on is maintenance. Maybe you used to do it and you gave up. Maybe you've had an illness or a death in the family and lost the energy or the will to do it. Maybe you've never learned how to do it. Maybe it just annoys the bejesus out of you to do it, like vacuuming does me. Frankly, it really doesn't matter. Whatever overwhelmed you and turned your maintenance mode off is the old news, and you can turn your maintenance mode back on anytime, truly. Spending some time on maintenance, no matter how you feel about it, is a habit just like brushing your teeth every day. You develop that habit because you want to keep your teeth in your head. In the same way, you develop the habit of clutter maintenance because you want to live in a space that isn't chaotic. You want to live in a space that functions and is easy and comfortable to live in. So even though it seems overwhelming or annoying, you can develop that habit to maintain your space. And I can hear the grumbling already, the mumbling under your breath, but I don't know how, but I can't be bothered, but I'm too tired when I get home from work. That's all true. And even so, you can still make some attempts regularly to stay on top of it. So here's some discussion about routine maintenance tasks and what happens when they get ignored. Do you struggle with laundry? This is a good one. Maybe you can get it through the washing and drying, but the clean clothes come out to a basket and it never gets put up. Some people get dressed from a basket in the laundry room, and some get the basket to the bedroom or the closet, but still take clothes from the clean pile in the laundry basket. It never makes it out. First, let me say that if you're living out of the laundry hamper, that's the perfect feedback about all that stuff in your closet right now and how you're not wearing it at all. You got to go in the closet and take it all out to donation right now. And then you can put away all the clothes currently being worn in the hamper and you'll never have this problem again. It's part of the laundry routine to put the clothes away. And it's part of your house looking peaceful that there aren't a bunch of clothes out in the bedroom all the time, draped over that chair, on a pile on the floor. Oops, sorry, knocking my thing. Is it because the closet or the chest of drawers is full or it's hard to add things into them? If putting away clothes is a struggle, then this is where your maintenance is breaking down and you'll need to clear away some space to make it work again. You don't have to redo the whole closet. Right now, it's enough to make space for the regular washing to be put away. And if you don't have time for the total overhaul that is your closet, then do enough to create space for your maintenance loop to be complete. When you get to the regular overhaul time, when you're ready to tackle the whole closet, you can finish the job that you start today. Another maintenance chore that causes problems is the dishes in the kitchen sink. So many of us use dishes, stack them in the sink for a week or two, and then the mass of wet plates and stuck on food starts to smell, and it's really gross to face. It always seems like waiting to do it later is the better plan, but really it just makes an annoying chore into a very disgusting one instead. That's the fault in the logic. There's no point where dealing with dishes gets prettier or less gross than right now. It starts out a yucky task and grows more disgusting the longer the wait. And what about putting dishes away? Whether that's emptying a dishwasher or taking dishes off the drying rack. That's easy to do. It's easy enough. But how about every time you head to get a snack or refresh your drink, you put two dishes away? You know you walk into the kitchen a million times a day. Using that moment of entering the kitchen to be your new habit trigger would allow you to associate an old habit, going into the kitchen to get water, with a new habit of putting something away. We've talked about that sort of habit linking before, and this is a perfect example. You can link your maintenance of putting dishes up to the number of trips you make into the kitchen every day. You can put away a clean dish or load a dirty dish in the dishwasher or stop to hand wash one thing, whatever suits your fancy. And then truly, if you have a dishwasher, you really have no excuse. You don't even have to wash the dishes. You just have to rinse and load the dishwasher. Push a button and the cleaning happens while you watch TV. That is some heavy lifting done for you. So make good use of it. The maintenance process to load the dishes when the meal is done or before bed or the next morning. Make sure you're adding that maintenance process in every day. The goal is to have only one meal or one day's dishes to manage because you're eating again tomorrow, no doubt about that. So the stack will only get more intimidating. Do today's dishes today and whatever routine you can devise to stay ahead. If you're the cook, then maybe someone in your house washes up. If you're alone, then eat and relax, but deal with the dishes as part of your bedtime routine. Whatever works for you to get that sink clear, because it'll be full of more dishes tomorrow. I'm just saying. Mine always is. I've got some more tips for making maintenance easier to manage. Just like when you schedule to work on your decluttering project, plan to work when you're the most awake and rested and energetic, if that works for you, if you can make it happen. It might be the morning, it might be midnight. That's a personal thing that you'll know about yourself. Whenever that is, if you do this irritating stuff when you're feeling the best of the day, you'll find it less annoying. And I recognize that that may not always be possible. It's just something to consider when you're trying to devise when and how you're going to tackle maintenance. Set up a specific recurring time to do some maintenance every day or week. Maybe a half an hour before work if you're one of those morning people. Maybe an hour after dinner. I tend to do it right when I come home because once I settle into the couch, I'm toast until about midnight and when I wake up again. So when I come home from work, I'm still in my work clothes. So I just stay in work mode and wander around doing a few things before I let myself change clothes and settle down. I process today's mail. I take out trash and scoop litter boxes. If I just came from shopping, I put away whatever I bought. I might cycle a load of clothes in the washer. The last thing I do is change my clothes and put dirty ones in the hamper and get comfy. That's my routine, and it means that I can stay ahead of the chaos every day. Okay, so the third tip that I'm going to give you is about having trouble. If you're having trouble getting started, this is a perfect opportunity to add in a timer. Set a timer for 20 minutes, work against the clock, and when it goes off, you're done. If you still feel like you can make progress, you can set the timer for another 20 minutes. And the third time that you do that makes an hour and you're really done for the day. Remember, this is maintenance time, not major project time. So once you complete dealing with anything new that showed up, maintenance is complete. Anytime you spend after that, you'll be working on the major project instead. So we're just talking about setting maintenance routines that are bite-sized and you can work into your day in a time when you feel like you have the 20 minutes or 40 minutes to face it. The goal is to develop a habit of decluttering in bite-sized, manageable pieces. Small and steady progress will keep your chaos from growing, and it'll give you the ability to make inroads on the backlog. I know this is a radical idea when you've been doing nothing about clutter for so long. There's no way to continue doing nothing and make a change in your space, however. If you want this space to be organized and clutter-free, you'll need to adapt some new habits to make it happen. The good news is you can create those patterns to your specifications. You can do maintenance work at 3 a.m. if that's your preference. The trick is to find something and some time that you're actually willing to do and then do it. Start small if you need to and build up to an amount of maintenance that stays ahead of new stuff every day. Hopefully you can handle today's new stuff today and get that done in a really short time frame so you can get back to relaxing and recuperating from your day. Okay, now Cookie has let himself out and I'm ready to take questions about maintenance.
M said, when I did the laundry routine, I discovered that the clothing left in the closet all had a common reason for my not wearing them. In my case, it was fiber content. Out they went.
Ah, there you go. It was itchy. It was uncomfortable. It was hot. Off it goes. Good job.
Susan said, I do well with routine chores like laundry, grocery shopping, and cooking. My downfall is keeping up with mail and paperwork.
Yes, everybody's dreaded mail and paperwork. Well, and we've talked about this a lot, but mail is basically, you know, it's one of those things that the smallest pile will always be today's pile because tomorrow there's going to be twice as much. So I am able to do that as part of my coming in the house routine. Like you pick up the mail when you come home, but that's one of the things you go to the mailbox and you grab the mail, right? And while it's in your hand and you're coming in the house and you're putting the purse down and whatever, sort of settling into the house from being out for the day, having that mail in your hand is your opportunity to spend 5 minutes standing at the counter, sitting at the table, opening it, looking at it and throw it away. And yes, it will take 3 or 5 minutes to do it, but it's so much easier than you think it is. It's so obvious when it's not, it's an advertisement. It's not important to you. It's so easy when you've got, oh, this is an actual bill and I need to keep that and go put it wherever I'm going to deal with bills. You don't have to pay it in that moment. You just have to not lose it. And so having a place to go put the bills is the only action you have to take. You don't even have to think about how am I going to pay the bill. You just go put the bill where the bills are and you deal with how you're going to pay with it later, right? So people find paper intimidating in that there's a bunch of decisions to be made, but the mail itself is a lot less, it's a lot easier to make your choices than you think because it's so obvious what is important to you and what's valuable to you and what isn't. The bills are valuable. The magazines that you paid for are valuable. The next 37 catalogs that came in from the last 37 catalogs you got mean that you have 37 catalogs to throw away because you got the new round. There's the choices at the point of the mail coming in the house are pretty small. I care about it enough to keep it. I don't care about this at all, and I can recycle or trash it. And if all that you can do is make that it's something I want to keep or it's something I want to trash, you're still in service to yourself just by spending the time to trash the 80% of it that's going to go in recycling or shredding or whatever you do about it. It's a much smaller pile than when you're done. That pile of things I'm keeping accumulates much more slowly than just mail in general. And I've had days where I've come in and everything in my hand is an advertisement or some kind of junk mail, and it all goes straight out into the trash. Like, I mean, into the recycle bin, there's absolutely nothing. I'm like, junk, 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 junk. What's that? Open it. Oh, junk. And it all goes in the bin. And so it's very easy. If you take the 10 or 20 things you have today and just spend 5 minutes, try not to be intimidated by the pile and don't associate the new mail coming in with all the paper you have in the house you haven't dealt with. Don't link them in your mind. Don't be like, oh God, this is more mail that I haven't touched. This is just today's mail and it's your maintenance chore to deal with today's mail. And it's a project that you can start and finish and be successful in. Recycle a bunch, go put the bills away, go put the new catalog somewhere or the new magazine somewhere. And you're done and the end.
Well, and your point about the pile is smallest today,
yeah,
is that this is really a good candidate for a for a daily routine, at least the 6 days a week that the mail comes in the United States. And it occurs to me that one of the problems I have with this particular routine is, since I work from home, I don't go by the mailbox routinely, except when I'm walking the dog. And when I'm coming home from walking the dog, my first priority is usually wash my hands, not handle the mail. So I think that I need a...
So you're saying you have the mail on your, in your hands.
No, no.
Put the mail down to wash it.
No, I don't want to go get the mail because I want to wash my, I'm coming back from a dog walk.
Oh.
And so for reasons that I will not, you know, elaborate on, I want to wash my hands before I do anything else. And so I don't want to go to the mailbox then. So I think I need, I need to connect that to some other, to another habit, or create a habit specifically for that. You know, when I take the afternoon coffee break, I walk out and get the mail and bring it back in. A time when I'm really prepared to deal with it, you know?
Right. Or alter the dog walking routine so that you have gloves on and then take them off and take, grab the mail. Like it, what, you could monitor the dog, you could alter the dog walking as well. Maybe you pick up the mail on the way out instead of the way in.
But then I have to carry the mail for the whole walk.
Yes, you do.
So I don't, and I'm not going to do that. But my point is that you have to, for a habit to be successful,
it needs to be something you're willing to do.
It has to be something you're willing to do, and it has to fit with the other things that go around it, or the other things that are provide, you know, are the context in which you want to do it.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's at the front of the house.
Yeah. Out by the street. It's out by the street, which is part of it. If it were, you know, if it were on the front of the house, it'd be a little bit simpler matter, because I don't have to put on shoes to get that. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I don't wear shoes pretty much.
You can have your male flip flops by the front door.
That is true.
You have male flip flops, you can wander down in your flip flops and come back.
Well, I mostly brought it up because it's about habits. You know, we're talking about habits and routines, and it occurred to me, thinking about this week, that one productive routine that I can connect to dog walking is, we have some beds along the side of the house that are growing a million weeds because it's the time of year for a million weeds.
Right.
And it occurred to me that when I am coming back from a dog walk with grubby hands, that's a great time to just pull up one or two weeds, just pull up a couple of things and take them and dump them in the compost bin. Because if I do that every time I walk the dog, in a couple of weeks, there will be no more weeds.
Well, that's true.
And so...
And your hands are already dirty anyway, so it doesn't matter. You know you're going to go in and wash them. So why not?
Exactly. Yeah.
That's a great idea.
It really fits for that. Connie asked, what do you think about fly lady's routines? Are you familiar with fly lady?
I'm probably not familiar enough with fly lady, but I know that she has some great how you go from room to room routines. What's the specific question about them?
Well, just what do you think about them? Connie said it helped me getting my routine set when I was a new parent.
Yeah. And I have heard lots of good feedback about, she creates routines that make sense and are logical and really help people get going. So, and her routines are mostly about like going through the cleaning process and cleaning the house. It includes some organizing as you go, but her focus is on how to keep the house clean. And she creates great routines room to room for that. So yeah, she'd be a good reference if you want to check it out and see if one of her cleaning routines works for you.
M said, what stops me from hand washing dishes is waiting and waiting and waiting for some hot water so they stack up. So that's sort of relevant to today's tittle, which we're going to talk about shortly, about, you know, identifying obstacles to the things that the maintenance routines you need to be doing.
Yeah. If you're having to wait a long time for the for the water to get hot, then I guess, you know, if you, so one question I have is, do you have a dishwasher and you're hand washing some and others not? The trick I would think would be to figure out something to do. You'd be no dishwasher. She says, okay. So then you just have cold water coming through that you are not going to use to clean, but you could certainly use it to be rinsing things out in preparation for scrubbing, even though it's not hot. So if you wanted to think of it as pre-rinsing before you dive into the whole scrubbing thing, you can certainly be filling up and swirling out pots. You can be wiping off residue off of a plate that has scraps on it, all that kind of stuff.
And that, if that's a chronic issue all the time, I don't have a suggestion, but if that's a particular, you know, if that issue is related to a time of day, if where you live, the hot water all gets used up early in the day, and you could make, you know, set this task at a time when not a lot of other people are using hot water.
Yeah. When you don't have, it's not competing with showers or something, right?
That's an interesting question.
Difficult problem. And maybe it's just that you turn on the water and you let it run while you wait for the hot water and you do something else in the kitchen. Maybe you put away the clean dishes while you're waiting for the hot water to come and let it be a time trigger that while you're waiting for the hot water, you're doing something else in the kitchen at the same time. And I'm not sure how, without having somebody come and addressing how long it takes, maybe that's just proximity to the hot water heater, then there's anything else to do but wait. And so then filling the time with a kitchen related chore while you're waiting might be the solution. I get it that you don't want to spend a bunch of time, but I'm not sure that stacking up the dishes and then doing a big massive pile of dishes all at once is any more fun. So I guess it just depends on whether you prefer waiting for the water less, and washing a big pile of dishes is less annoying, or the other way around. It would annoy me to have a big pile of dishes, so that I would have to like wait for the water and do something else.
While we're on dishes, Samudra shared, I washed dishes to deal with anger so long that I started getting angry every time I washed the dishes. Don't take it out on the dishes, Samudra. Those poor dishes.
That's funny. Sorry. That's funny.
Jane said, setting a timer is hugely helpful to get me going. Most of the time I end up going longer. Getting started is my biggest challenge.
Right. And there's something about the timer and having the clock ticking, particularly if you're having trouble focusing. I don't know what it is about. It's totally artificial, but the idea that we're racing against time that's running out keeps us in motion. You know, it keeps us going. And so it's a good, a cheap, easy solution to get you started. And like you said, sometimes it's just, you just got to get over the hump of getting started. And then all of a sudden you're cooking with gas and you're into it and you're rolling and you can go way beyond 20 minutes or 10 minutes or five or whatever you set it for the first time. So good for you. I'm glad it's working and I'm glad the tittles are helping. Thank you for saying that.
And Jane says, speaking of time, I tend to run out of steam after 2 hours. I reach decision fatigue, it seems.
Yeah.
I'm curious how much time most people can work with Gail before they reach their limit.
Right. Okay. So the reason that I have 3-hour appointments is because at the end of 3 hours, everybody wants me out of their house immediately. They're like, go away and stop talking to me. And so it is a level of, like, I'm sort of pushing people a little bit past their own comfortable limit at that point. Because like you said, at 2 hours, you're super tired and you want to be done. And so at 3 hours, I'm continuing to work around people and keep them in motion beyond when they would normally do. And then they're sort of, you know, tired and they've shut down for the day and they've had enough. Right. I occasionally have somebody that can stay on it for longer. So a 4-hour appointment and they can keep going, but it's usually somebody that's really motivated or has a very strong time deadline. Like, you know, we're doing the garage and it has to be done today, or we're moving out and the moving is happening in 2 weeks or whatever, they have some time pressure. And so they stay on it, even though they're tired and would rather walk away. But, and I have some clients who are like, okay, an hour and a half in, they're like, I'm exhausted. Like, okay, let's take a 5-minute break. And some people can, if they switch tasks or stop and go get a glass of water and sit and sip something for 10 minutes, they can give themselves a little mental rest and then they can come back to it. So I do try to pay attention when I'm working with people, and the 3 hours, you know, I can keep asking questions for 3 hours, but if you're having trouble with decisions, then stopping and walking out of the room and doing something else for a minute gives you a little mental break, and then you can come back to it and get back on it again. And it sort of extends your ability to make decisions that way. You have to pay attention to you. There's no win in you pushing yourself so hard and then collapsing at the end. It's way more important to find out what your rhythm is, how long you can go comfortably, and then give yourself a mental break, which is why setting the timer, why the Pomodoro technique works so well. When you set the timer for 25 minutes and then stop and pause for 5 minutes, stand up, walk around, get a drink, go to the bathroom, come back and set 25 minutes again. So you're doing 25 minutes and a break, 25 minutes and a break to get through the hour. And that gives you 2 5-minute mental breaks to rest your brain before you keep going. And so building in that little pause would help you if you're finding 2 hours is a struggle. And just don't let the pause be the way that you stop. Like, you do the hour and then you go, okay, I'm going to pause now. And then you look up and it's 3 hours later. Like, you don't want to do that. You want to time your pause just like you time your work, so that you take your pause and go back to it. It might make it easier. And like I said, I go in and I spin around somebody for 3 hours, and at the end, they're ready for me to go home. So it's not just you.
I want to make the reminders that I hardly ever get around to making.
Okay.
For example, I want to remind those who are watching, who are with us live, that we have a YouTube channel. Those who are new may not know that. We have a YouTube channel with more than 200 videos on lots and lots of organizing topics. Visit cfhou.com/YouTube. Subscribe to our channel while you're there and click the bell icon next to the subscribe button if you'd like to get notifications when we post something new.
Please do. We're heading towards 20,000 subscribers and we would love to reach that that level. So
woohoo!
Go team, go.
Let's go to the tittle now.
Okay. I am going to the tittle now. The tittle this week is called Routine Matters. This week's assignment is to consider a new or revamped maintenance habit. Identify a space or a function in your home in which you struggle to stay ahead of the accumulation of clutter, like the dishes we talked about, or the clothes, the laundry being processed. Reflect on what gets in the way of keeping this area under control. What difficulties or limitations do you encounter? I can't get enough hot water. There's no place for me to put the clothes away. Those are the barriers to completion of the maintenance routine. Consider how much time you're currently spending on this area or purpose in question. Make a tentative plan based on how much time you think it might take to manage the area effectively. So, do you need a half hour a week? Do you need 10 minutes 3 times a week? Something like that. How much time do you actually have to do to make this maintenance routine happen every week? And then put the plan into action. Stick to the new routine until you've done it for a few weeks or at least a few times, and then adjust the frequency of duration of your work sessions as needed to complete the task to your satisfaction. And then come back and tell us about it, because you know we love to hear how what your results are and what fails as well, because those fails inform us just as much as your wins. And good luck, and we wait to hear how it went.
Amanda said, it's kind of a way to gamify tidying. Set a timer or a goal number and hit it. I do both and try to beat the clock, like put away 50 things in 10 minutes.
Ooh, that's a good one. Go team, go. And you can certainly do that when putting the dishes away in the kitchen. Like, can I empty the drain board in 10 minutes? Can I empty it in 5 minutes? Let's set the timer and go and race against the clock and see if you can get it done. I love it. If you are motivated by gamification, you should use that to your advantage and gamify it in whatever way that you can do. Ed is a master at that, frankly, and he loves to gamify, keep charts, you know, get something done every day. He is a big on that. So, and it's very successful for him in terms of productivity. So
keep the streak going.
Keep the streak going. Exactly. How big can the number get? How many miles can you accumulate? Whatever it is. So,
How many days that in works a row for can you fill in the blank?
Right. Go team, go. Good, Jill. Good idea.
Samudra said, I can't tell time digitally. I need an analog clock to see what time I have left. And
that's okay.
Does an egg timer work okay for you?
Yeah. I mean, the little timers on the kitchen, you know, sit in the kitchen, you can spin the dial and watch the dial moving. That's super easy, right?
When we've talked before about the time timer, is that time?
Yes.
Timer.
Yes. Timetimer.com. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Which is a kind of super cool timer where the time that's left is displayed as a wedge of color that, you know, it spins around in it, and the wedge of time that's left shrinks as your time winds down.
And they started out with an analog version. They the original ones were wall clocks to put in kids' classrooms, and the sleeve of time, you would set the timer for 20 minutes, and then the red sleeve would slowly shrink over time. And it was totally an analog version. They do have a digital app version now as well, if you want to watch. They just basically draw a circle and of the time and make the red thing disappear on your phone. But it is totally a visual analog clock adaptation to show the movement and shrinkage of time. And it was designed for kids in classrooms, but it became adapted for people with ADHD because they have such a terrible sense of time passing. And this is a way for it to be a visual representation of the movement of time. It's super helpful for people that struggle with that, with understanding that time is going by and how rapidly and how much is left. And Time Timer products work really great. They're not cheap, but they're totally worth it. And they have little portable desk ones. You know, they have little small ones you can carry around the house. You have one on the wall. And like I said, they have an app on the phone. So they have many options for you to use and try them and see how you like them. Tell them I sent you.
There you go. Let's talk about next week.
Okay.
To those of us who struggle with clutter, speaking of time, to those of us who struggle with clutter, it can feel as if time itself is our one insurmountable obstacle. As we work to declutter our lives and spaces, we have difficulty balancing and allocating our time. And there's never quite enough of it. In our next episode, we'll discuss procrastination, estimating the time required to accomplish big projects, budgeting time for ongoing maintenance, and other areas where organizing intersects with our perception and management of time. Join us next week, May 17th at noon US Central Time, for Race Against the Clock, Time Issues, and Organizing.
It'll be a good one. I hope you're able to join us, and let's talk about how you can manage and project the amount of time you need to get a project done.
Let's go to our announcements. If you are watching this on YouTube, we'd love for you to join us live. To get notifications about upcoming events, we invite you to join the meetup group by visiting cfhou.com/meetup. You can also follow us on Facebook by going to cfhou.com/Facebook or subscribe to our mailing list by visiting cfhou.com/subscribe. We love to hear from you, so please send us your questions, comments, and topic suggestions on YouTube, Facebook, or anywhere else that you find us. And you can always reach us through our website at clutterfairyhouston.com.
Thanks everybody for joining us today. I hope you're having a good day, and we will wait to hear about your tittle next week. See you later.
Bye-bye. Bye.